It's, first of all, thrilling to see somebody come out on a really difficult day. Thank you so much. Although you're not doing it for me, I know. That's even better. Thank you for those who worked hard to get us set up sound-wise and so forth. Thanks to them as well. Yes, question. The question was, what are the factions fighting in Zimbabwe? If you know a little bit about what goes on in Africa, see what happened in Africa. Up until it's hard to imagine, but up until about a century and a half ago, it was called the Dark Continent, right? No one knew what was in there, and then the person who opened it up was pretty much David Livingstone, as you know. Livingstone's motivation was to convert Africa, and you read his, Livingstone's book, Travels in Africa. He gets in arguments with other people. He says, basically, says, I'm here because God is going to convert Africa. God is going to turn Africa into a Christian continent, which would have sounded really crazy back then, right? You got to be kidding. We don't even know who's there. Well, Livingstone brought the gospel to Africa. The Western colonialists, if you will, it's a bad term, but actually they built hospitals. And back in the day, Germany, Belgium, France, and England colonized, if you will, certain parts of Africa and brought things like roads, universities, and hospitals to Africa. Didn't have them before. So what happened was you began to have somewhat of a productive nature in Africa. Well, at this point, not that long after Livingstone, we have the Bolshevik Revolution. And the Bolshevik Revolution, remember, that's the international socialists, the communists. Think of the communists as international socialists. They want to spread it everywhere. Think of the Nazis as the national socialists, right? Basically saying we want to have socialism here. What happened was, the communists being the parasites that they are, they weren't interested in Africa at all. They wouldn't have been prior to Livingstone. But once you had universities, you had roads, you had production, now they're interested. So before, the way I say it, before Africa could get Christianized to any great degree, here come the communists to destroy everything. Every single time in, especially southern Africa, where there's a regime change, there's bloodshed. So the guy they got now, by the way, anybody know the nickname for the guy? They had Mugabe there for about 40 years, right? Anybody know the nickname of the guy they have now? They got rid of Mugabe and they got another guy. Anybody know? Nobody knows? His nickname is the Crocodile. Sounds like a pleasant guy. I'm going to cast my vote for the Crocodile. Can't wait to get him in here. Well, when I was there last year, it was during that week you had the power shift. But I knew, and everybody that's familiar with Africa knew there was going to be some kind of a bloodbath. Because in Africa, you don't have power change without a bloodbath. And I said to Charles this week, I said, okay, this is the bloodbath we knew was coming. We just didn't know when. And he said, that's exactly right. So the people fighting there, here's what happened. The Chinese have their claws deep within the country of in that country, and they're carrying out all the wealth. The Zimbabweans can't pay their bills to the Chinese and to other investors, right? So the new president, the Crocodile, announces a 200% increase in the cost of gas. 200%. When I was there, you were well over $6 a gallon for gasoline. So it just went from $6 to $18. So people are now rioting, and he's turning out the police, shutting down communication, and they're doing some killing. I read from one other source that the police and the army are breaking into houses of suspected protesters at night and killing them too. So it's chaos. It's the people that are upset at the Crocodile, and the Crocodile's upset at them, and and you're gonna pay. And he has to get the money from someplace. And that's what all good tyrants do, right? Squeeze it out of the only source they know, the poor slobs that are working for a living. So that's what's happening. That's, if you're familiar with Africa, that scenario is played out again and again. This is old stuff for those dear people. It's a mess. It's horrible. But we see the mercy of man in action, right? This is man. What we do. Yes, Dave. It's made for conflict. Yeah. Oh yeah, Godfrey will talk about the hospitals that were built, the roads that were built. Over the years I've talked to people from Africa, and they've told me, they said, you know what, the English, the French, mostly the English, they built the roads, and that was the best time the roads ever were. Since that time, the roads have just been deteriorating, nobody's fixing them. Same way with the hospitals. Yes, Jen. The question was, how big is Zimbabwe? I believe it's about the size of Texas. I might not be correct on that, but I think I'm pretty close. About the size of Texas. Pretty big. It's a big place. Very productive. It could be. And it was productive at one time when it was Rhodesia. A net exporter of food. But now, since independence, people are starving to death. Yeah. Again, this is the merciful man taking over and ruining everything. It's just we got to get that stuff through our heads. Yes, Jeremiah. That's a real good example, because I believe that if they would have been carried off, see, Nebuchadnezzar was already had the Jews, they were already serving him. And I think if he wouldn't have carried them off in the beginning, even to Babylon, he would have just destroyed them all. And kings did that kind of stuff. They just killed everybody, and then they would bring in other transplants to intermarry with them and then just destroy their heritage altogether. So I think that you're exactly right. The carrying off to Babylon was a mercy, and another mercy was letting them come back. All very merciful, because the 10 northern tribes, they got carried off and no one ever heard from them again. They don't know where some people think they know where they are, but I'm not convinced. But yeah, that is absolutely an example. Might not have been seen as a mercy at the time. We have to ask ourselves, what would they have done if left to themselves? If Nebuchadnezzar doesn't carry them off, I think instead they just die and don't even become a people anymore. It's a good example. Yes, Jen. Right. Would it be correct to say that persecution is a mercy on God's people, because it pushes people back to him? I would say, first of all, it doesn't always do that. Sometimes it has the opposite effect. I think we see that again in the southern kingdom and the northern kingdom, for example. You had the prophets. A lot of the Old Testament prophets, or a decent amount of them, were actually prophets to the northern 10 tribes. And they were oppressed by the local kings, and they did not turn back to Christ. They just didn't do it. And when you read carefully in the Old Testament, you have these pictures of what it was really like. For example, the one king, Remember when Elisha was a prophet in Israel, and he was, and the king of Syria, remember Naaman, right, had leprosy, and he had a slave in his house who they had captured from Israel. So this kind of thing was happening. You know, going in, let's go capture these people, let's burn the village and carry them off as slaves. It was just going on. It didn't seem to have the effect on the northern 10 tribes as it did ultimately, if you will, on the southern. But I would argue that, you know, in this country, I mean, we still have 60 million dead babies. If there's persecution in the church, I believe God is merciful to withhold his hand, and he's also merciful when his hand of judgment comes. I believe he's merciful in both. That's a little bit different from what, I know this is kind of a different sermon here this morning, probably. But I believe both are mercy. I do. Yeah, Wes.
Is there anything left of these walls? I mean, how did they just disappear?
No, there's nothing left.
Cyrus?
There's nothing left. Oh, over time. Babylon was still...
What did they do? Did they concrete?
I think it's very possible they're made of concrete. Being a concrete person myself at one point, maybe not as much as others. I actually studied the history of concrete when I was in concrete sales. So, kind of stuff I did. And apparently the Egyptians had access to cement, cementitious particles, as did the Romans. Even this day, and I believe it's in Italy, there is still a huge dome, like over 100 feet across, that we cannot build today. We cannot build anything like it. It has no rebar in it, nothing. And no one knows how it was built. So we know that cementitious materials existed. After Rome, it was lost until recently. So it's very possible that there was it was concrete. Because it existed before and existed after. Yes?
For example, I think when you talk about God's judgment, one of the things that we would look at as a bad thing is like an economic collapse. When in reality, it might be a good thing for the kingdom of God. Because it destroys certain economies, like maybe people wouldn't have money to spend on abortions or you take a lot of wickedness out of quite possible. But we don't look at it
right that way.
We don't look at those things as
right. Statement being that an economic collapse could actually be a mercy of God, a judgment and a mercy at the same time, because there's a lot of bad things happening with the money being made now. Let's face it. I hate saying it, but it's true. A lot of bad things being done. Yes, John.
To Wes's point about the walls, Nineveh had enormous walls as well. And there's a story, I think it was one of Alexander's generals came across these walls in Nineveh during their escapades in the Middle East. And nobody knew what it was. They sat at the base of these walls of an abandoned city that were sky high in the same way, but the city had been abandoned and they were falling down. And nature has a way of tearing down the walls, concrete, mud, bricks, whatever, it's going to tear it down. And the same thing happened in Babylon. It was abandoned for years, and people thought it was a myth. They've only rediscovered Babylon like they rediscovered Nineveh. But it all went away. Jericho remained settled, but the walls were gone. And then they discovered the walls during excavations in the 1800s. So they're there. It's just, they fell down. One other thing, while I was studying for this, the classes that I was teaching on historical context, Babylon was taken very, very quickly, but just by the way it was described going under the walls. But there's a lot of evidence to show that the people were very happy to have the Medes and the Persians come in. The rulers
yes.
had become completely wicked. They were suppressing their religious activities, and so the people turned against. And there was really no defense of Babylon except the walls. And when people came in, they just opened the gates. So.
Yeah, and that's not the first time it happened. You see that in some of the so-called communist wars of liberation.
Yes.
You know, like, can't wait till these foreigners come in and get rid of these slobs that we have in charge now. Yes?
It's very common to bring these building materials from one building to another building, too.
Sure. Yeah, materials are reused, and Alexander did those types of things, broke down walls, and then threw the material from the walls in the water so his army could march across. He did that type of a thing. So he made good use, right? Tear down this wall, I don't have a wall anymore, and then we'll be able to walk across the water and attack those people over there. Pretty practical guy. Okay, thank you for your kind attention.